Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm not here with anybody else. Flash is out for this last final week, and he'll be back next week. And so I'm going to do a solo show and talk about my top 10 cards of 2024 this week. It's going to be a romp. We're going to get there. It's going to be amazing. But if you forgot where you're at, you're watching the Mock Stars Podcast or listening on any major podcasting platform, the number one show on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. The 23 crisp flavors. Oh, the nourish the soul, the nectar of the gods. Oh, yeah. I can feel it coursing through my veins. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube where we have 400 subscribers. We hit the mark, everybody. Time to celebrate. We're super stoked. Thank you all for your support. Thank you for subscribing. You can also, you should like, subscribe, and ring that bell on this video because we're super duper cool. And we're only going to get super duper cooler, the coolest podcast on the interwebs moving forward. So make sure to stay tuned by ringing that bell for more notifications. Yeah. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms. Like I said before, leave us a comment on Spotify because you can do that, and we'll get back to you. It's a great place to interact with us and just, you know, overall ask any questions if you have any about the show. You can also support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead for $3 a month, become a supporter of the show, and gain access to our final giveaway, because our Patreon, not our final giveaway ever, but our final giveaway for the current Patreon structure, that'll get you one entry to support the show, and then you can become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, like Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, maybe Jeremy, maybe Anthony, Will Rule, K Mr. K, UWP Quirt, Demon 82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost. By becoming a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, you'll get two entries. And I'll have an update on the Discord server with the new Patreon structure. I'll also be announcing it on next week's show, what it will be, but it'll drop first on the Discord server. So make sure to join there and get an early look at what it will be. I'll be having some deals go live that'll have you can show your support for the entire year and all that good stuff for a discounted rate. So more to come. We're super excited about it. We think that this is gonna just be better for everybody. So thank you to all of you who've shown your support. We also have Revenlift in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge holding down the throne, earning that bucket hat. Almost there, my friend. Almost there. Before we talk about the top cards of 2024, I was really curious. So, like, we use RSS as our distribution platform for our podcast. So I was looking at it and I was like, man, who supports us the most in what part of the country? And I was actually super surprised. The most downloads we've had in the last 6 months came from Singapore. Crazy. Thank you, whoever is out there in Singapore, for listening to the show, the community of y'all out there. We see you. We recognize you. Thank you so much. And then Los Angeles, Seattle, no surprise. What's up, guys? Phoenix, Portland, Toronto, and Melbourne. Bonjour. Chicago, Las Vegas, I know they don't speak French, okay? Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., Austin, or Orlando, Louisville, Montreal, Philadelphia, and Minneapolis, which encompasses most of the Midwest, I imagine. So, everyone out there, it's just a tier list, you know? So, if you see yourself on the list here, or if you heard your location, get your downloads up. Share it with your friends and family to move up this list. Get a shout out. Get some recognition. Support the show. All right. Top 10 cards of 2024. It was hard digging through everything that came out. And I just had to get a little flashback because, like, we had a lot of sets drop this year. So Ravnica Remastered, Murders at Karlov Manor, Ravnica Clue Edition, Fallout, Outlaws of Thunder Junction, Modern Horizons 3, Assassin's Creed, Bloomburrow, Duskmorn, and most recently, Foundations. So I went through and I was sort of like digging through these sets, and we'll do that together in just a second, but I had to go back. I cut a few of these out of here, like Ravnica Remastered. I only really wanted to bring up like new cards, right? Because like if I just did top 10 cards of 2024, yes, Cyclonic Rift was indeed printed in Ravnica Remastered. The fetch lands were printed in Modern Horizons 3. You know, there were a lot of really good cards. You know, Mana Drain and Mindbreak Trap finally got a reprint. So I didn't really want to include those, but I just wanted to go through the sets most recent to least recent. It's good to talk about the freshest stuff right away and then dig back and be like, oh yeah, that card was printed. So let's dive right in. Let's go into it. So here's the thing. This isn't support for Card Kingdom. They do not pay me to say nice things about them yet. If you're listening to this, Card Kingdom folks, what's up? Sponsorship, please. All right. But Card Kingdom, what they do really, really well is when you go in and look for singles, their advanced search tool, there aren't really any platforms that lay out prices like and then have you categorize them from high low. TCG Player, yes, but it's just a, you know, all over the screen. So what Card Kingdom does really well, and this is how I've gone through, and the market really sort of like sets and determines the value, like, and playability in a way, right? Like the demand that we place behind cards sort of like determines their value and blah, 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 blah. It's the laws of supply and demand, folks. But it's great to see that we attribute power and playability to cards and it reflects in the price. So it's easy to go high to low and see what is played, what isn't played, and then also see what sort of like cards actually attributed to the overall power level of 2024. But I was going through Foundations and honestly, like Sire Seven Deaths is like third most expensive card in the set. Cards kind of, you know, dog shit. So, you know, it's like not, there isn't a whole lot from Foundations that has attributed to what I guess we're talking about. I guess this is a focus in like CDH, right? Like this is a CDH top 10. Boom. There we defined it. This set was designed for Standard. They didn't have any Commander decks come out alongside Foundations, so it makes sense that like, yeah, there weren't really any, like, yes, there were some Commander cards that were printed to make money because it's the largest format in the game, so like, yes, Doubling Season sells packs, it's here, it's also in Standard, which has created some really crazy things, you know, in the Standard format, so that exists. Twin Flame Tyrant not seeing play in Standard, huge Commander card. Blasphemous Edict, Commander card. Don't know why it's that expensive, you know, but regardless, there weren't really anything, or there wasn't really anything from Foundations that like has contributed to the overall metagame in CDH yet. So moving on, Foundations real quick, nothing to mention. Duskmorn. Now this is a set I was super excited about when it was announced. I thought the concept was really cool and we got a lot of really cool cards, and I'm super stoked like with everything it received, because we actually did receive quite a bit of power and a few cards that are attributing to CDH, not massively, but in ways that are nuanced enough that they should be mentioned. I really hope Overlord of the Hauntwoods, even though it's a freaking tyrant in constructed right now, I want this to work so bad. It's an enchantment creature. It does everything that I want it to do. But it just isn't good enough for CDH right now. Kaido, Bane of Nightmares. I think that this is exclusively a Yuriko card. It is worth mentioning that it has basically gone in every single one of those lists. It, you know, makes ninjas bigger. It helps look at, you know, you surveil to and sort of manipulate the top of the deck. Does everything that Yuriko wants to do. The Verge lands, also really great cards, like that they're untapped, you know, duels essentially, right? A fetch and this in your opening hand, thumbs up. Yeah, that's pretty damn good. Like, I wouldn't say they're the most powerful lands we've seen this year, but they're pretty damn good. The one card, like the big card that has come up, two cards really that have come up here. And the first one is Enduring Vitality. It's one, a green for an enchantment creature. Yay! Elk Glimmer. It's a 3/3 with vigilance that creatures you control have tap, add one mana of any color. Now, that is the line of text that we all love to see. That's really great. It's Cryptolith Rite, but has a substantial value as a creature, where, like, you could say Essica only cared about legendaries, and that was too limiting. And now Enduring Vitality comes along, and it has, this enduring effect that when it dies, if it was a creature, returned to the battlefield under its owner's control as an enchantment. So it has its own form of protection. So it comes back to the battlefield, and you still get those effects. So it's hard to remove, it's hard to interact with, and creates some combos that allow you to, well, or just generate more mana now that we're in a very creature-heavy meta. So it's a really great card, and it's starting to find its way into five-color good piles like Kenrith that can use the color flexibility to activate their abilities and whatnot. So really like it. Really great card. And the next card, you know, maybe two cards here, Fear of Missing Out. I love this card. This almost made my top 10, and it would have just been a personal preference type of thing, but I had to cut it. It sucks. I didn't quite make it. Fear of Missing Out is really good. It's one in a red enchantment creature nightmare. When it enters, discard a card, then draw a card. It feeds you information, right? It keeps the cards moving. And then, whenever Fear of Missing Out attacks for the first time each turn, if there are four more card types amongst graves and cards in your graveyard, Delirium, untap target creature. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase. So, if you aren't unfamiliar with this card, I've talked about it a few times on the show, but this and Kiki Jiki go infinite together. So, as long as you have Delirium, you swing with this, you tap the Kiki Jiki, create a copy of it, it enters the battlefield. You discard it, you know, you essentially get to draw your entire library as well. But you create a copy of it, you untap the Kiki Jiki with the attack trigger, and then bada bing, bada boom, right? The copy has haste, so you swing with that on the next combat phase. You get an additional combat, you untap the Kiki Jiki and create a copy of the Fear of Missing Out, and then boom, 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 boom. Drawing all the cards, creating you know, as many as you need to win the game. And yeah, it pushes through it. The thing is it also pushes through like blockers where you can just fearlessly swing into somebody, and like it doesn't matter if they block it or not, you've attacked, you've got the attack trigger, you get to untap Kiki Jiki, you get to untap Kiki Jiki and then continue the loop. And then as the damage stacks up on their blocker, it'll eventually die and you just get through with the damage eventually. So the only thing that can really prevent that type of combo is, well, like, I, you know, killing the Fear of Missing Out before it all goes or whatever. But once it gets rolling, it's pretty hard to stop. So Ghost Vacuum is also here. We've loved Agatha's Soul Cauldron on the show. I think it's also Agatha's Soul Cauldron has also been, you know, it's a huge combo engine, so it has greater value. But Ghost Vacuum in constructed formats has shown up, but in CDH, I have seen some decks that are very artifact centric care about it, just because there are some decks that care about reanimation and stuff like that, so it can eat those creatures and then also have value later. All right, so Duskmourn, not much beyond that, like, Elevir likes Sheltered by Ghosts, and that's pretty much where it stops. Like, there's not a lot of value beyond that. Even the commander decks struggled to provide any value for CDH and struggled to provide really any value for commander in general. While the decks might have been fun to play, they were so boring, or they lacked value, and that's why they probably didn't sell well. So, all right, Duskmourn, we're moving on. Oh, I did happen to look through it, and Giggling Skitter Spike is like the big thing. Meh. Bloomburrow, really great set, really popular set. It turns out the Magic community likes furry creatures. I'm not making any assumptions, or there's no prejudice involved in that statement. All you Kink Unlocked folks out there, when this set dropped, Bloomburrow gave us quite a bit. I really liked the set. It was actually a lot of fun to play and has contributed a ton to Standard and continues to do so. But the commander cards that were printed for the set, like Three Tree City, didn't really contribute towards CDH. And Innkeeper's Talent as well, another casual commander card, not really contributing at all to CDH in general. Caretaker's Talent as well. I mean, it's a good standard card, good constructed card, not a CDH card. So it takes us a while to actually go down, find what was good. And I remember when the set first came out and Maha It Feathers Knight was like, ooh, that could be nasty with the Orcish Bowmasters. It reads good because your opponent's control have base toughness 1, but it is just not good enough. So as we scroll down and we look through, I really like Dawn's Truce. I think Dawn's Truce is actually pretty good. Because at instant speed, you can force someone to draw a card and upset their little Thassa's Oracle plan. So I think Dawn's Truce is pretty good. Still could find a slot in a two-color deck that includes white, but not really anything more than that. There are just too many other good cards that it would take up a slot that you would blah, 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 blah. Patrick Banner, another commander card, but now we actually start getting to the CDH cards down near the $6 a piece range. Mockingbird. I love Mockingbird. X and a blue, 1/1 flying. You may have Mockingbird enter as a copy of any creature on the battlefield with mana value less than or equal to the amount of mana spent to cast Mockingbird, except it's a bird in addition to its other types and has flying. So gives itself evasion. This was better before the Dockside ban. There were you could it shortened the Dockside lines for copies, which would we needed help. But Mockingbird is unique in that it is a clone that can be tutored up by Ranger Captain of Eos, probably the first or second most heavily played white card in CDH. So Mockingbird has this tutor ability that you're already including Ranger Captain, and so now with Mockingbird it copies the best thing on the field at any given time. I didn't rate it super high when it was first announced or first spoiled, but I've seen the value. I've seen it go into deck lists and provide tons of value, so I'm all about it. I really like Mockingbird. I think it's a great card and deserves to be in the top 10. Valley Floodcaller. Now this has made waves in CEDH. For 2 and a blue, for a 2/2 flash, Otter Wizard. So the typing is relevant, Wizard being relevant. You may cast non-creature spells, though they add flash. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, birds, frogs, otters, and rats you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Untap them. Vayrin sort of coming back into play makes Valley Floodcaller, magnifies Valley Floodcaller as well. But there's some combos that have come up with Valley Floodcaller and other frogs, otters, stuff like that. that have created some infinite mana loops. Helix. Something Helix. All right. It's Retraction Helix and Banishing Knack. Until end of turn, target creature gains return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So you return a rock that is mana positive or, you know, like mana neutral, even with like Basalt Monolith, and you're able to untap, make something infinitely big, and then, yeah, and potentially generate infinite mana. So, yeah, it has proven to be a good enough combo where people are actually running or actually running it, you know? So, Valley Flood Caller just being a combo engine on its own. We've seen cards that are just like parts of two card combos that have made waves in CDH in the past. So you love to see it here. But not only that, it just does the thing, you know, like it allows you to win at instant speed, which is one of the more valuable things that can happen in CDH, is winning on the stack when someone else is going for theirs. So Valley Flood Caller, incredibly powerful. And has Flash itself. So, Flash, what do you think about that?
Yeah, whatever.
Fair enough. Great card. Probably making the top 10. I'll reveal the top 10 at the end, by the way. So, no spoilers. All right. Not much left in Bloomborough. The commander cards did actually provide some value. We got Hazel's Brewmaster and Poliwag Prodigy there. Those are both incredible cards. Poliwag Prodigy being one of the better card draw engines we've seen in CDH this year. It's been worthwhile in testing, and it has proven to generate quite a few cards. So for two mana, you get a 1/3 that has Evolve, and then whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell with mana value less than Poliwag Prodigy's power, draw a card. So notably less, so it only capitalizes off donuts right away. But then after that, you put one creature into play, it's probably going to get a counter, and then it starts to encapsulate so much more of what it, you know, is playable in CDH, since everything is like two or less. So yeah, you just got to get a couple triggers, and then all of a sudden it's probably the biggest threat on the board, just due to how many cards it's allowing that player to draw. Hazel's Brewmaster, also another really spicy card in Bloomborough commander decks, because this is a 3/4 menace for 4 mana that says whenever it enters or attacks, exile up to one target card from a graveyard and create a food token. Foods you control have all the activated abilities of all creature cards exiled with Hazel's Brewmaster. This was breathing new life into devoted druid combos that I think are still relevant. I think Teom will run this, even though it's 4 mana. They're already running on the druid lines and a bunch of reanimation enchantments. So like getting this to come out and then creating the infinite green mana with it is just valuable enough to get the infinite, you know, you essentially get infinite activations to Teom at that point. So Hazel's Brewmaster has seen plenty of play in CDH as of late, because you know, also Kenrith decks like to play it, because reanimation, huge, feeding the grave, huge, card advantage, huge. Hazel's Brewmaster pretty much does all of those things. And food is also super underrated, you know, with all of the cards that have released with, you know, Bloomborough and Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. Hazel's Brewmaster just magnifies like those cards and just gets better and better and better. So even though it probably can be a casual commander card, it's not. Totally a CDH card. And I still haven't seen, like personally, a Hazel's Brewmaster win, but I do see the upside and I do see why people play it. All right. On to the next set. Assassin's Creed released. And there's really only one card. I don't even know if it's worth digging, because it took a lot of digging to find it. Apple of Eden, Isu Relic, is pretty much the only card that was worth mentioning from Assassin's Creed. It popped up in a bunch of lists, Rog'Sai lists and stuff like that, after Dock'Sai got banned. So what it is, it's a 4 mana legendary artifact that says tap, pay 4 life, sacrifice it, look at the top, or look at target opponent's hand and exile those cards face down. You may look at those cards this turn mana and use any mana of any type to cast those spells. Until end of turn, whenever you play land or cast a spell this way, its opponent draws a card. At the beginning of the next end step, return the exile cards to its owner's hand. Activate only as a sorcery. So it was essentially a silence against one player that you knew was you would interact with you and allowed you to pursue a more aggressive win. I'm not sure how much play it's still seeing, but it is worth mentioning due to the impact it did have on CEDH at launch. So, yeah, Apple of Eden, Isu Relic. I don't know how valuable it is moving forward because, like, people have turned to, like, I mean, the valuable cards in Assassin's Creed are, you know, like Excalibur, you know, plus 10, plus 0, Vigilance. Rah! So, Apple of Eden, worth mentioning. Don't think it makes my top 10. Moving on. Modern Horizons 3. That was 2024. We got one of the best sets for CDH and for Modern. Honestly, Modern, you know, got a breath of fresh air with this set as well. But there are a lot of cards. There were a lot of cards from Modern Horizons. It was crazy. But right away at the top, the most expensive card from Modern Horizons 3, I don't think anyone could have predicted it. I definitely reached out to my brother and I said, buy all the Ocelot Prides in the world. Buy them all. They're $20 a piece. Buy them. And now they're 40-ish. Card Kingdom always inflates their prices. So, you know, they're probably 35 on TCG Player. But Ocelot Pride is really great. It really only fits into very niche CDH builds. It was better when Dockside was around, but that just isn't the case anymore. But it's a first strike lifelink ascend. At the beginning of your end step, if you gain life this turn, create a 1/1 cat creature token. Then if you have the city's blessing, which is, you know, you get it if you have 10 or more permanents, for each token you control that entered the battlefield this turn, create a token that's a copy of it. So it kind of went nuts, and that, especially when, man, we already went past Bloomburrow, but Balin was a significant impact in CDH as well before Dockside got banned, and Ocelot Pride was run in that deck as well. But yeah, it's just ultimately died off with Dockside, but it's still a powerhouse in Modern. So rolling down, you know, there really weren't in the most valuable cards in Modern Horizons 3 outside of like the fetch lands. There really weren't a lot of like CDH cards, you know, like I put Arena of Glory is something to mention just because like haste is super valuable in Commander. If you don't, haste is super valuable. Just I'll leave it at that. Your creature gets to do its thing without having to wait for three other players to do their thing. So I think we need to put in a petition to value haste more. I don't know how that affects people actually, but you know, it's like haste is great. Arena of Glory is great. And it's seen play in multiple formats. It should see play in CEDH. All right. The first real card that comes, you know, to like at the top of the list for like as far as value goes in Modern Horizons 3 is Sink into Stupor. Sink into Stupor is basically now run in every single blue deck just because it's a land on the backside as well that is it can enter untapped if you pay three life, but it on the front side, it is not a counter spell. It is return target spell or non-land permanent and opponent controls to its owner's hand. Wah wah wee wah. It's super good. I didn't rate it so highly like when it was first announced. I didn't think that, you know, these were the cards that were really gonna make waves. But I'm so glad they dove back in and decided to revamp these MDFCs. Because Sink into Stupor is fucking nuts. It's really good. It just takes the place of a land. When you don't need them, you don't need them. And there are a lot of constructed decks that run no lands, and they run all MDFCs, and then they win that way. So, like, Sink into Stupor, really good in CDH. You know, same can be said, like, Witch Enchanter also finds a place. Disciple of Frailes also finds a place. Profane, Fail to Profane also finds place. As we keep going down, Flare of Denial, I thought would be way better, but it just hasn't done the what you would think it would do as a free counter, you know, as a free counter spell. The restriction of sacrificing a non-token blue creature is actually a lot harder to achieve than initially thought, because a lot of the decks that want to run this, their commander is valuable. The only one that doesn't, like, out of all the flares, right, the best one is the Flare of Duplication, just because you're playing it in Rog'Sai, and it's a counter spell for zero mana that it does not, like, Rog'Sai decks, you or Rogue-Rack decks in general don't really care if they sacrifice their commander. Where Flare of Denial really fits in is probably like Rogthras, like TNT like type decks, where, you know, like Flare of Denial, you're sacrificing the Thrasios to keep the game alive, and your goal is to generate infinite mana anyway, so you just go get the Thrasios later. Like, that's where it exists, and that's where it, you know, like Thras Pass, or, you know, Thrasios Passios comes into play, is Flare, and that's where Flare of Denial gets better. You can always hold up a threat. But not as good as I had hoped it would be, question mark. So, yeah. Warren Soul Trader, part of a few combos that generate infinite mana. And, you know, I started really thinking about a lot of the cards that exist in Modern Horizons 3, and they just kept getting better and better, but don't quite see the market reflection. Shifting Woodlands has become one of the better lands in green decks, because it allows you to fight control in a way. Like, as long as you have Delirium and something ends up in your graveyard, you know, like Shifting Woodlands can become a copy of it for four mana. So, like Food Chain decks, like, you get countered, boom, Shifting Woodlands can become that food chain, can keep the strategy alive, keep things rolling. So Shifting Woodlands, amazing. I mean, in most green decks, you're probably playing Crop Rotation. So, like, Crop Rotation is even less of a dead card, you know, if you already have drawn your Guy's Cradle, if you have Shifting Woodlands in there. And I think you, most likely, if you're playing green, you're playing Shifting Woodlands, just because the power of recycling something in your graveyard is often overlooked. So, a really great card there. Six. Oh, God. I've got a history with this one. I think if you've listened to the show for quite a long time, you'll know that right away I was like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. For two and a green, it's got reach. It's a 2/4. Whenever it attacks, mill three cards. You can put a land from among them into your hand. That's not card advantage. Yes, it is. It is. It absolutely is. As long as it's your turn, non-land permanent cards in your graveyard have retrace. That's where it gets really good, doesn't it? Because it's basically an Underworld Breach in green. So six, as long as you have a land, right? Oftentimes the one cast is all you need. It's non-land permanent cards in your graveyard. And like I just said, the value of playing the same card in a singleton format twice is just, it's often overlooked. So the six turns out brought new life to the Gitrog monster, and being a combo with Dakmor Salvage and Lotus Petal, because then you can just discard the Dakmor, cast a Lotus Petal, and then draw a card. You know, as long as Gitrog's out there, it generates infinite mana, draw your entire library, and bada bing, bada boom, another card for that deck to combo off. Like, this is such a good card. It's really great, and I don't know if it's an auto-include in all green decks. You know, like, I think a lot of decks run around, like, 27 or less lands, 28, 29, if you're land-focused, you know, and then 6 loses value as you go down. So, like, Mox Diamond, for me, my rule for Mox Diamond is that it's 28 lands. If I'm not playing 28 lands, then Mox Diamond is a little riskier than I like. So I oftentimes will cut it if I drop below that point, and then try to make up for it with different, you know, like Dorks or Rampant Growth or something like that. So six, the more land-centric your deck is, the better it gets. And this is a really great deck, or a really great card for Teom. It's a really great card for Gitrog Monster. Grave combos. Yeah, six is there for you. Consigned to Memory. Another card that doesn't see much play, even though I do think it deserves to be mentioned. For Replicate, you get to, you know, it's for one blue. Counter target triggered ability or colorless spell. So, triggered ability, whenever, boom, that's a triggered ability. You know, so like something entering the battlefield or colorless spell, you can counter Soul Ring, you can counter, you know, like artifacts. Counter a One Ring. Oh, what? The card that's played in 90% of decks, you can counter it with one blue mana. So Consigned to Memory is worth playing. And also the fact that it has Replicate and you can hit multiple things on the stack is pretty damn good as well. So really like the card. Necrodominance, also good. So many great cards. Flare Fortitude, you know, gave Academy Rector and Arena Rector decks new life. Like for at instant speed, you could sacrifice and have upside. You know, it's so good. But after that, you know, Birthing Ritual still yet to be proven. Fell to Profane is good. Springheart Antuco saw a little play right away, but, you know, has fallen off. Sowing Mycospawn for a while was, you know, an infinite mana outlet that allowed you to exile everybody's lands and then win, you know, by controlling the game. Strix Serenade is, again, another card worth playing, but doesn't see a lot of play just because Swan Song is just better. You know, this is a card, like Strix Serenade is a card that doesn't protect your win. It is only, it doesn't like provide you that same flexibility where it can help you pursue the win and protect the game. Like Strix Serenade, pretty much just artifact, creature, or planeswalker. So it doesn't stop. It can't help you win the counter war on the stack. So that's where it like falters. Beyond that, if I miss anything from like Modern Horizons 3, let me know. It's just, there's so much. There was so much in this set. It was crazy. So in the comments, make sure to leave a comment. Before we go into the last couple sets and we reveal our top 10 of 2024, just to remind you where you're at, you're at the Mock Stars podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. And if you would like to sponsor the show, this is what a sponsorship might sound like for you. Oh, hello, company. Hi, company. I'm the Mock Stars podcast. We do stuff. We talk about your stuff in a really nice way. It, you know, makes you more appreciated by our listeners and generates business for you. Oh, really? That's what you guys, you do? You do that for us? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. We do that for you. Just a little bit of money our way. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do anything. You should give us a word. We'll do it. That's what sponsorship would sound like. Woo, Mock Stars Podcast. All right. we're off the rails. Okay. Murders at Karlov Manor. This is a set that I don't think anybody really saw it being influential in many ways, but there's only really a couple cards or 10 from Murders at Karlov Manor that were really notable. And first, Trouble in Pairs, unreal, unfreaking real card advantage for white. They fixed it. They fixed white. You can stop fixing it now. Trouble in Pairs, two and a white. If an opponent would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. Oh, yeah. Tivit, eat it up. Whenever an opponent attacks you with two or more creatures, draws their second card each turn, or casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. Yah. Oh, yah. It does so much. It is an unstoppable force. I love this card. Trouble in Pairs. One, it's an enchantment. Yes. Two, can draw you potentially, the ceiling is nine cards. You can draw you nine cards before you see your next turn. Yeah, well, an opponent could cast two spells on your turn or draw their second card on your turn, and you would get another card draw. So, it's like, it really is the best to offer, you know, like outside of Smothering Tithe, which is probably the best mana generation like we have in Magic right now. Like Trouble in Pairs is a card engine, and it fixed all of the problems that was wrong with Smuggler's Share, whatever that was called, that bogus shitty card. All the things with Monologue Tax fixed. Like Trouble in Pairs just does it all. It's such a great card. If you're not playing it and you're in white, you should think about playing it, especially if you're focused on a mid-range, like the mid-range game. So, if you have control elements or anything like that, Trouble in Pairs is excellent. Give it a shot. Probably a top 10 card. I'm going to have to rethink my list. Damn. After that, Delny. Delny, right away, I thought that it would lose steam after Dockside got banned, but it is only, like, it is a niche card in a way that has continued to, double triggers is really good, and that's, like, with the design space that Wizards of the Coast has just decided to, everything is doubled. Sometimes things are tripled, but, like, Delny, creatures you control power 2 or less can't be blocked by creatures with power 3 or greater. If an ability of a creature you control power 2 or less would trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. It's really good. Most creatures in CDH are that, power 2 or less. So it really does if it's in your list, it wins you the game most of the time. So, Delny, it is, when it is on the battlefield, alarms are going off. It is such a good finisher. It is a good value engine. It, I think every line of text matters, and a lot of people just overlook the creatures you control power 2 or less can't be blocked by creatures with power 3 or greater, and they just overlook that. But then when you swing and you attempt to block, you go, oh, no, I can't. I can't block that. They get through. They get their combat trigger twice. It's really great. It's a really great card. Now, outside of that, Murders at Karlov Manor didn't really provide much for creatures, but it did provide quite a bit of value in lands. Well, we did see Massacre Girl Gnome Killer show up in a couple lists at launch, where it did become like a draw engine with a few things that helped magnify that ability, like Toxic Deluge. Deluge. Masker Girl would draw you a ton of cards, if it survived. So, lands. Murders at Karlov Manor gave us the probably the best cycle of lands that we've seen in a long time. Like, I think initial impressions, Flash and I hated these. We thought, man, these are just not good enough. But the Surveil lands, they are so good. Like, they have land typing. That's what makes them really good, right? But then when it enters tapped, no matter what, unless whatever. But when Undercity Sewers enters the battlefield, or one of these Surveil lands enters the battlefield, Surveil one. So not only does it give you card advantage by feeding, like seeing what you could potentially draw next, but it also fills the graveyard. And when the most common powerful win conditions in the game are focused around having cards in your graveyard, where your graveyard is essentially a second hand, the incremental value, and when it comes down to a lot of the time in CDH, it is incremental value, making a mistake in turns 2 and 3 can still reflect on how the game goes turn 7 or 8. Now, it's hard to recover from those things, but that can also be said about the benefits, right? Like, if you open the game tutoring for, seeing the signs of the table, reading how the table is behaving, and then going for a Surveil land to get more information, that little bit of incremental information, that one more card that you got to see versus what everyone else is doing could be the difference maker. And that is like the ceiling, like for these, that's what they have. But like, they've made waves in pretty much every format, and you're only playing one of these. Like, I could say that all 10 of these, you know, like just encompass them. But like, it is like, it's just can't, I just can't overstate, or I probably just can't even put words to how powerful that effect is when, you know, when these, in our initial impression with Surveillance was, these are just dog shit, man. Like, these suck. You don't even draw me a card. You know, it's like, I think this is the balance, right? Like, where we were under the impression that if something entered tapped, it was unplayable. But like, this is proven otherwise over time that it is indeed. They are very much indeed playable, because of the card advantage, because of the information that it gives. So I will rescind. Yeah, that's the thing. When you make a podcast, when you put your voice out into the world, you can't be afraid to, you know, make a mistake or have the wrong opinion of something, because you can always, you know, release a later episode and be like, yeah, I was wrong. I was totally wrong. Yep. Me? Wrong. Yeah. So hopefully I'm right with this one and where I put it on my top 10. Because these lands are good. All right, what do we got left? Yeah, I think that's the last set. Yeah. Yeah, the last set that we really need to talk about for 2024. What an exciting year. Like, we saw it all. We had product fatigue. And then this sweet artwork. If you're on YouTube with us right now, this sweet artwork for Modern Horizons 3 that tantalizes us so much, that the Hydra Tamer. Why couldn't that card just be cool and playable? Such a good artwork. Wasted. But 2024, overall, is a great year for Magic. And while we had plenty of news, plenty of things happened, like events we all were pissed off about. You know, we're all pissed off about Universes Beyond. We're all pissed off about Secret Lairs being, you know, kind of lackluster. I mean, some of these sets, even like, I think people were pretty upset with, you know, like happy. Some of us were happy with Fallout. You know, it didn't really contribute anything to CDH, which is why I just didn't really cover it at all. You know, and Assassin's Creed, same thing. Assassin's Creed felt hollow. Like, it didn't really bring anything to the table or anything new or exciting or fun. But I did get my ass beat by an Assassin's Creed commander. So they definitely did put some power in there. Overall, the sets were a little on the nose. Thunder Junction was very corny, cheeky, annoying, tropey, not really fun in that way. Bloomborough was cute, was a new plane to discover, was so much fun to play. The cards were really well designed. Duskmourne, another really like creepy, dark space, like the design space, even though it was very kitschy with its 80s horror film design, I thought that it still like created a unique experience and a unique realm for players to explore. And overall, that was a lot of our criticism, is that the immersion has been broken with the game a lot of the time, because we're crossing over into different universes and we don't necessarily feel like the game is what it once was. But this is Magic the Gathering now. And I can say, I don't know, maybe out of 10, it was a 7 out of 10 year. It wasn't the worst year that I've ever experienced in Magic the Gathering, you know, like, but it was pretty good. Overall, we got a lot of really cool stuff, and we got way, 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 way more enchantments this year than we'd have in the past. So Menace is a happy, happy camper. All right. Revealing the top 10. Don't judge me. I don't have Trouble in Pairs on here. I forgot it. I was too busy thinking how cool 6 was. So, number 10, Sink into Stupor. I think Sink into Stupor definitely deserves to be on the list since how much it is permeated through the format. It deserves to be one of the top 10 cards of 2024. I put Hazel's Brewmaster at number 9. I do think this is where Trouble in Paris probably like jumps in. 6 at number 8. Molten Duplication at number 7. I know I didn't mention it at Outlaws of Thunder Junction, but Molten Duplication brought the mana count necessary to assemble dual caster loops down by 1, which is a huge difference maker in the format. So Molten Duplication also giving something haste has proven to be valuable, like Goblin Engineer, Goblin Welder even. You know, there are a few combo lines that have now appeared with Molten Duplication and certain artifacts. So really great card. I'm sorry I didn't talk about it, but it does crack my top 10. Number 6, I put Mockingbird. Number 5, Poliwag Prodigy. Flash, you should be happy about that one. Number 4, Shifting Woodland. Number 3, Valley Floodcaller. Number 2, Flare of Duplication. Like, I really think that has turned Rog'Sai decks into the beast that we all fear, right? Like, not that like single-handedly, but before Dockside got banned, Flare was even better. And you know, with Dargo and stuff like that, like those decks were a house, you know, with this new toy to play with and sacrifice shells. But yeah, Flare of Duplication is the best of that cycle. And even though Flare of Fortitude deserves to be mentioned, you know, it's like Flare of Duplication, just it's a ricochet. It's, you know, it's a deflecting swat. It's so good when you have a red non-token zero cost commander. So it can come down and it can just be a threat right away. You know, like Rogrek does so much. It does so much. And if we're looking to make spicy statements on the air and rescind those comments in a future episode where I say I was wrong, I think, you know, Rogrek, look out. Banhammer's coming, baby. All right. Surveil lands are my number one card for the year of 2024. That's how wrong I was. I do believe that those, maybe not, I don't know. I still think I'm wrong. My number one. You know, it's like I was so wrong about them and the advantage that they provide. Sheesh. They fill the graveyard. They just give you so much more information. And they're tutorable, you know? Like, we're all playing fetches. We're all doing all that stuff. Nah, you got me second guessing this. If you guys think I made any mistakes, leave a comment down below on YouTube where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. And help us get to 500 subscribers! All right. Help us get to 500 subscribers one by one, one step at a time. We appreciate every single one of you. So thank you so much for your support. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms where you can leave us a 5-star review to make us look super duper cool. Share us with your friends if you think this is a cool, cool show. And remember, we'll have Flash back in the studio next week, but across the country. So everybody, thank you for bearing with me, the Menace, for, you know, and hope you've enjoyed these last couple episodes, our one-on-one time. Yeah, make sure if you leave a 5-star review and you mention it, be like, yeah, that one-on-one time with Menace, it was great. Sweet, sweet, sweet stuff. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead and enter our final giveaway with our current Patreon structure. For $3 a month, you can support the show. You can also become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead like Will Rule, K Mr. K, UWP Quartz, Demon 82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost, Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, definitely Jeremy, maybe Anthony. And we also have Ravenlift hanging out in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge. If you become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, you get 2 entries. And spoiler alert, the new Patreon structure will include more seats in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge. Everyone will get a hat and get five entries into each giveaway. So look forward to that. Like I said, announcements coming first on the Discord server, so stay tuned. There'll be a link in the description below on the YouTube video and in the description for this episode on your podcast platform of your choosing. Make sure to join the Discord server, join the community, join the discussion. And yeah, we love engagement. We love talking to you guys. So, woo, the more we do that, the happier we are. Okay, this has been the Mock Stars podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper, the home of the mid-range mindset. Nigai gonna do. And let's see, Don Cheadle. He hasn't been mentioned yet this episode, but he did a really great job in Reign Over Me. If you haven't seen it, it's an Adam Sandler, like, serious drama. Heavy, heavy stuff. Don Cheadle, though, money. Money. Really great. All right. This has been the Mock Stars podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you later. Peace.